Welcome to the 247 Real Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Julian Perry. It's a pleasure to be here with you again for another week and another episode of the 247 Real Talk Podcast. I hope you had a great week since we last spoke. Here in the Eastern Seaboard, the weather was a little unsettled, but it is winter and it could be worse. And as I'm recording this for you, this episode, it's about 8:45 p.m. on Wednesday, January 31st, 2024, which means it's the last month. The last day of January of the first month of the year, and that also means we're getting that much closer to spring. This week, I wanted to chat with you again about something a little personal that I've experienced, the members of my family, interacting with healthcare providers and healthcare offices. And I'm interested, once I've done my part, to find out from you, what have your experiences been like? So sit back, relax, and I'll be right back with you. So welcome back to the 247 Real Talk Podcast. Like I said, your host Julian Perry, and this week I'm going to share with you just a few experiences I've had. It shouldn't be a long episode, about my interactions with the healthcare industry and how dishonest I think they have become. I'm going to start off with, I'm not going to name names of businesses because at this point, and I'll tell you why as I go along, and as I say, at this point, I'm seriously considering making some reports to the Attorney General of New York, the Attorney General's office, about some experiences I've gone through and making some other complaints. Starting off with a dental office that my family, everyone in my family goes to. I'm gonna tell you about my experience last. But a member of my family went to the dental office for cleaning. Walked in, got the cleaning, that's all they got, walked out. As you know, the insurance company would send a copy of what they paid the dental office, right? And it'll just say this is not a bill, and it will show you a breakdown of the charges and if by any chance there's anything that you owe. Well, the insurance that they have, the Fattis family member, covers everything. But when they looked at the bill, it was not just for cleaning. The dental office had charged for x-rays, for four or five different things and services that were not performed. Now, I believe this is a tactic that a lot of these offices do to raise the amount of money they get from the insurance company, right? Because they make an agreement with the insurance company to accept a certain amount of money for a certain service. But when you're going to lie, and that's blatant lying, on your claim, you know, these offices, to get more money, you're not just being dishonest, but you're actually creating a problem for the patient, because certain types of things, like certain types of x-rays, if they're like sort of a general look, the insurance company only pays for so many x-rays for a certain type within a certain period of time. And they've actually used up one of your chances to get an x-ray, claiming that that's what they did. And of course, if you go to argue with them, they'll claim that they did it, and everyone in the office will ride the same bandwagon. Then my wife went to the dental office, and she had, I forgot what she had done, but they submitted a claim with the insurance company, and there was some hiccup. And they contacted me, because I'm the primary on this insurance, and they said, hey, the insurance company denied the claim. I went on and called the insurance company, and they said, oh, there was a mix-up. No problem. We'll resubmit it and pay it. It's not a problem. It's covered. Some sort of glitch. So I contacted the dental office and said, look, you know, they're going to resubmit this claim if there was some sort of glitch. Well, it turns out that they took some time to do it. And the dental office, I guess, got impatient. Eventually, the insurance company sent a document saying, hey, actually, when they sent the denial, they said that the claim was submitted and what the insurance company pays in full, where there's no patient responsibility, is, I'm sorry, I'm adjusting my camera a little bit, is $98. When the dental office became impatient, because it took a few weeks for them to get this resubmission and get paid, they sent a bill to my wife saying, you need to pay this bill or we're going to send you to a collections agency. How much was the bill? $328. So they weren't even sending a bill for what they would have gotten paid from the insurance company. They were saying, well, since we didn't get paid this $98 from the insurance company that we would have accepted, we're going to charge you our own fee of $320-something, $28. Well, it turns out the insurance company eventually paid the bill, and you know, we heard nothing more from the dental office, at least not so far. This happened a few weeks ago. Then I'm sticking with this office, this dental office, before I switch to the next one. So the biggest issue that I had with this dental office, same office for me personally, I had a tooth that broke. And I went to the dental office, they looked at it, they took x-rays, and they submitted pre-authorization to the insurance company. Of course, when the insurance company responds, they send them the pre-authorization and they send a copy to me. My copy showed where they denied paying for certain crowns and, you know, saying that these root canals and these crowns that you're saying that you need based on the x-rays and everything are unnecessary. Of course, the dentist disagreed. But they did agree to pay for another tooth, I think on the same side, adjacent to. So we made I made the appointment, went in there, and as soon as I got to the receptionist said, look, you have to pay $200-something for this tooth. So I said, you know what? If the insurance company doesn't cover it, $200-something, I'll pay the $200-something. So I paid the $200-something, went in, sat down, waited, went through, the dentist came in. He discussed it with me again. He's calling numbers, number 16, number 15, this, you know. I said, well, I spoke to the lady, she explained to me I paid the $200-something. Okay, we'll proceed. I come out, procedure's done for now. They've ground down, you know, sometimes when you sit in a dentist chair, you can't really tell what's going on, right? I get to the counter, the receptionist, he says, well, we have to grind down two teeth. We're going to put two crowns. You have a balance of $1,086. What? Yeah, the insurance company didn't cover it. But when I walked in the door and you had me pay, it was supposed to be for one specific tooth. Then when I got in the chair and you put the Novocaine in, it seems like you worked on two different teeth. We argued for a while. She pulled out the papers from the insurance company showing where they said they wouldn't pay. But my argument is, first of all, I don't know what all those codes mean, but I do know that the insurance company disagreed with what you're saying, and I do know that what I paid for and what you told me when I came in the door was quite different from what you did. So it got really heated, and I said, you know what? I'll give you a down payment of $300. I need to go speak to the insurance company. But really and truly, it was checkmate, right? Because you have to figure now that I've got two teeth ground down with two temporaries on them. They've gone so far into the procedure that, you know, and the thing about it is, here's the catch. The second tooth that they ground down, which I have a crown on now, turns out that he's going to tell me that after he ground it down, he determined that he did not need a root canal, which is what the insurance company said in the first place, which is why they said they wouldn't pay. But I was between a rock and a hard place now, because when I called the insurance company said, yeah, we're not paying for that, because we told them not to touch that tooth because it was fine for you to do a filling because you didn't need a root canal, which turned out to be the truth. But the dentist did what they had to do because they're going to get paid, and because the insurance company wouldn't cover it, I had to pay. At the end of the day, I had to go back to get it completed because now I had these temporaries that were really temporary They had already taken the mold. They were having the teeth made. And so I had to end up paying their balance for this $1,086. They then said to me, oh, we're going to resubmit the claim to the insurance company and see what they say. I never heard from them again. I had to pay $1,086. So at the end of the day, the entire family, they've lost all our bit. We're done with that. We found a new dentist, and we're looking for a better experience there. They seem to have a great rating, 5-star rating, so we're hoping it's different. But these kinds of practices that put you at the mercy of these people, that ask you for cash money out of your pocket, these offices are so unethical. And then, by the way, it was amazing, and I hate this, and I'm sorry to bring this, interject this, but this is a systemic prejudice that we live with. Everyone in this dental office was non-minority. Let's put it that way, right? Let me be careful with that because I got my friend of mine, my supporter, who's going to really get into me for saying that. Everyone in this, from the dentist and everyone down, the assistants and everything, are white. Only 2 of the 4 receptionists are people of color. And the one that deals with the bills is an African-American woman, a black woman. And she's a bulldog. She behaves like a bulldog. It almost seems like she was put there purposely in that position to try to intimidate people into paying. Because the minute you approach her, even if you're in everything's good and you're in good spirits, her approach immediately is aggressive. She was put there for it's strategic. So nevertheless, I am still thinking about, because I have the bills, and I'm in the pondering it at this point if to present an entire case and submit it to the Attorney General's office for further review of this office, because I believe they're doing it to a lot of people. And now here in Nassau County in Long Island, where you have a lot of more affluent people, people just pay. They don't question. And I think they're taking advantage of that. So then I'm going to tell you one more story about a dental office. Someone from my family went to a dental office for an extraction. They had an extraction, and the person said, there's a wisdom tooth. And the dentist said, you have to come back. You have to do the other wisdom tooth. They wanted to do both at the same time, which I thought they should have done. But she said, no, she wasn't going to do it. So they gave her a date to go back for the extraction. They called her and reminded her about the date. Now, I know when I have, for instance, labs, blood work, if my doctor's office happens to call me to remind me, or even if they put it in my portal online that my appointment is upcoming, it also has a reminder in there as to how to prepare yourself. So you need to fast for 8 hours or whatever the case may be. Well, it turns out that because the selection that this family member made was to go to sleep, to be put to sleep for this wisdom tooth, she was not supposed to eat for 5 hours prior to. And I had given her a ride over there, and I saw her taking out food just before she left, but it didn't click here either. Anyway, she gets to the dental office, and the receptionist is now saying to her, hey, did you eat? And she said, yes. She says, ooh, we can't put you under if you just ate. So she says, you have to wait for the dentist. She goes into the dentist, and the dentist says, okay, no, I can't put you under, but I can give you something local anesthesia. Now, I've had teeth taken out that weren't even wisdom tooth, and an extraction, even if it's not a wisdom tooth, the amount of force you feel in your jaw as they rock back and forth with a tool to pull it out is not easy or not fun. And this member of my family is an older member of my family, and they didn't want to deal with it. So they said, no, no one reminded me about not eating, and I don't want to do the local. The dentist tried to convince her to do the local, and when she said no and stuck to her guns, he got angry. I said, oh, well, you're not gonna get another appointment for another month. Well, she said, fine, that's okay, because I'm not in pain. I want to take out the wisdom tooth, but I'm not in pain. So she goes out to the receptionist now. She says, the dentist says I have to make a new appointment. And the receptionist looks for the next vacant time and says, yes, I've got one in a week. So she schedules her for the week, a week from when we went. Then the phone rings, and it's the dentist calling from inside his office to the receptionist. They have a brief conversation, And then the receptionist says, I'm sorry, I can't give you the apartment for a week from now. I have to give you it for at least a month away. So basically, the dentist got mad at her because she didn't want to take the local anesthesia and paid her back by giving her a further appointment away. Now, I know some of these dental offices run a volume business, right? They do the work, you know, one after the other, and they take the lower amounts of the insurance company, and that's how they make their money. But when that goes in front of the well-being and the desires of the patient, what kind of unscrupulous behavior we continue to deal with and be at the mercy of? So that's another issue that I have to think about. I don't know how I'm going to approach that one yet, but all these things are part of the advocacy that I try to do that I don't necessarily discuss on this podcast all the time, but these are things I do. I have written the Attorney General's office. I have written the Speaker of the Senate, Chuck Schumer. I've done that on multiple occasions before. So the last one I'm going to tell you about in terms of healthcare is my experience at my doctor's office. And I have an amazing doctor. He's been my doctor for, I want to say, about 20 years. The problem you find when you go to these offices, though, is many times when you know, back in the day when you saw the receptionist and you had a regular primary care physician, you got to know the receptionist because they were there for the long haul. These days, every time you go to these offices that are much bigger buildings and multiple offices and all, you know, set up for a sort of capitalist ideology, every time you go in there, a different set of receptionists. It's like a mill, you know, and a revolving door, I should say. And so I went to my doctor, had a great visit, and he told me that when I came out to go see the receptionist to make an appointment for blood work, for labs, within the next 3 months. Now, this particular provider used to do labs internally. They've been outsourcing them, and they still have one or two locations that do them internally. I prefer to go to the internal location as long as they exist. So I asked the receptionist to make me an appointment because they don't allow the patient to do it. The lab appointments have to be made by the receptionist there. She immediately gets loud and aggressive with me. So I said, I'm sorry. She's kind of saying, you have to go here. She handed me a list of places. I'm saying, I'm sorry. This doctor's been my doctor for 20 years. I've been doing this repetitively, and usually they schedule it here. Was there a change in policy? You have to go here. And she starts, I said, I heard what you said, ma'am. I'm simply asking if there was a change in policy that no longer allows me to conduct the business that I've done frequently here as a part of the service being rendered to me. Well, you have to, I don't know. You know. And so I took the paperwork. I backed away from the counter. It took every bit of rationalizing in my mind and calm in my spirit not to go back there and give her intellectually and politely and professionally a piece of my mind in front of all of her peers. But, you know, when you deal with the public and you're dealing with people, especially in the healthcare industry, I'm thankful to God that my health is pretty good. But a lot of the people I saw there at that counter that she was dealing with as well, some were leaning against the counter. They were elderly. Some stood up there for a while because they have a list of specialists they have to see because they have so many health challenges. And to go to a healthcare facility, not in the best of health, maybe not even feeling well that day, and just wanting to see the specialist you have to see or make your appointment so you can get the help you need. What you need as the interaction is someone who's empathetic, who's kind, who's patient. When we are sick and we want to speak with someone, we want to get healthy so fast, or if we're in discomfort that, you know, we might be a little agitated ourselves, but it's the job of the people behind that counter, especially in healthcare, in any business, but especially in healthcare, to be trained to recognize this, to be trained with to have patience and empathy and calmness. So that many times patients who come in and they're all aggravated, not feeling well, have such a good interaction that not only are they comforted that they're able to get their business done, but even their temperature, their mental temperature goes down. It is amazing that people get hired for receptionist jobs and those things, and the criteria that you had to have no longer exists. And then they send an email to you later on. I just got one from them asking for feedback. I haven't responded yet because they're going to get my feedback, believe me. And it's not good. It's good about my doctor, but they've got to do better. So I want to know from you what your experiences have been. I've heard some horror stories out there. And I also want to know if it's something been repetitive. If you want to email me at podcast@247realtalk.com and tell me your story, especially if it's ongoing. I'd like to join you in some sort of advocacy, especially as we're speaking on this specific topic. And I know I have a lot of doctors and nurses and health professionals who are part of my supportive audience. I know that as you hear this episode, I've actually had guests on this show who are doctors, who are nurses, especially during COVID. And I know that they're cringe when they hear that someone had that kind of experience, because the people I've had on my show and the people I've dealt with are professionals who see their peers behave in this manner and they're disgusted by it. And so any of you who, you know, want to talk about it as a healthcare professional, let's work it out and let's have your conversation with you on the show as a live guest. And for those of you who are struggling with an office right now and disgusted and tired, I need some help or someone to join forces with you to escalate the complaints to get resolutions, email me. I'm here and willing to help, willing to spend the time and have the patience with you so that you can get something that you all human beings need, healthcare. So that wraps up my conversation about healthcare for this episode. I'm going to digress as I close because I want to talk about something else that upset me this week. I don't know who we've become as people. We are such hateful, distasteful, unethical, immoral. I don't know. I don't have enough adjectives to describe how so many of us have become. And many people out there look to see when someone trips and falls, when someone does anything that appears in the news, and they look to find a way to pick it apart and spew their hateful rhetoric towards that person. And I want to talk specifically about a case that you heard in the news about so Yusuf Salam was one of the youth who was convicted and I think spent 5 years in jail for the Central Park jogger rape. He later on found out his confession was thrown out and he was freed and he's innocent. This young man decided to become part of the solution and ran for city council and won. So he's a councilman this time. And as the tape goes that was played all over the news over and over again, he was pulled over for what they're saying was illegal tints on his car. And as I heard the body cam footage that was recorded, the officer went up. The officer asked him to roll down his window. And then he said, I think he asked the officer what he was pulled over for, but he identified himself. He says, I'm Councilman Yusuf Salam of, I think it was District 9 or something like that. And the officer said to him, you're a councilman? Okay, we're done here. Right away, the next day, they called for him to resign. For what? Let me put some common sense and context to this. First of all, I have many friends, and I say this repeatedly, who are police officers, and they tell me stories. I'm gonna talk about a specific retired detective from the Bronx who told me that many years ago, he was driving in Nassau County and he was pulled over. He identified himself as a detective from Bronx. I think it was Bronx Narcotics Division or something like that. And the police officer gave him a ticket anyway. He kind of made me laugh because he said he told the officer, okay, we'll return the favor when you come to New York City. The reason he said that, though, is generally speaking, unless it's an egregious crime where you're drunk or you caused an accident or did something awful, police officers give other police officers a professional courtesy. It's the same professional courtesy that one doctor gives another, a lawyer gives another, etc. In this case where Yusuf Salam was pulled over, I'm going to deal with two things real quick. I think he was absolutely in his right to identify himself as a city, as a public servant who was an elected public servant. The officer said, we're done here. But everyone needs to get the perspective that the officer also had the option of giving him a ticket still. Him identifying himself and saying who he was did not any way usurp the authority of the officer to give him the ticket. He didn't say, do you know who I am? Do you know who you're talking to? Like we've seen on many recorded videos where people of authority have done that. If it is okay for a police officer to be pulled over and to say to the police officer who pulled him over, I'm officer so-so. Usually they use the term that I'm on the job and show their shield for professional courtesy. Why is it not okay for this man to identify himself? Do you think that if it was a judge that was pulled over, regardless of whether he was a person of color or a white person, that they wouldn't have done it? Do you think any other politician wouldn't have done the same? But I'm going to go one step further. We live in a hateful society. In politics, we've seen people hurt, kill, shoot, do all sorts of things to someone else because there's a difference in opinion or they're on the other side of the aisle. They're opposing ideology. It is my personal belief that for the time and even beyond the time, if you're elected to city office or any kind of public office where you're involved in the process where you make decisions that impact the public, the first assumption should be that there's going to be a segment of the population that despises you. They dislike you because of the decision that you voted for. They may dislike you because of how you look. They may dislike you because of the color of your skin. But the people who make the sacrifice or who pursue public service and public office have families. And I think it is perfectly okay if someone holds that position and gets elected that they should be allowed to have tints on their cars. Many undercover police cars, law enforcement cars, have tint on the windows. If I know that I am now a public servant in a capacity where someone may target my family or target me, what is wrong with me having a tint on my window so that people can't recognize who I am? There should be an allowance for that in our code, in our laws. So I'm saying that to say that maybe the officer decided, because he identified himself, he's a public servant like the officer, who is also a public servant, to give them professional courtesy. Or maybe he decided in his mind, once he identifies himself as a councilman, that even though it's not on the books as the law, the tint made sense. Regardless of what the decision was, those who are calling for this young man who suffered at the hands of New York City, lost 5 years of his life in jail, wrongfully committed, shunned by the public, shunned by politicians. I'm not going to call names, but some politicians said some really nasty things about these five young men. Especially because they were people of color and the victim was white. Only to find out that these men didn't do it. Now he turns himself around and offers himself up as public service. And there are people out there who simply can't look for the good in what he's trying to do and who he became. And the give back he decided to do despite how we as a city treated him. And they're calling for, oh, he used his position to get off. No, he didn't. It doesn't matter what he said. It doesn't matter if he identified himself. The police officer decided to give him a professional courtesy. Or like my friend who was a detective in the Bronx, he could have still given him the ticket. It was not the councilman's choice. It was the police officer's choice. And he did what I believe was the correct thing to do. Because at the end of the day, if I'm driving around with my family and you're going to target me simply because I'm a public servant, an elected official who has to make hard decisions, then I want some level of protection too. We ought to look and put our energy toward things that are changing our lives and messing them up. There's a world of politics out there and hatred and racism and violence going on all around us. And instead of putting our efforts towards things that make a difference in an unbiased and constructive way that lends itself to a better life for us all and to unifying us for unity, people sit there and look for these little things to nitpick at, to let their hatred spew, whether it be because of the color of their skin or whether it be for their difference in ideology. It's sad that human beings have gone to the level where that's all they aspire to be and do each and every day. If they got a few dollars in their pocket and they walk down the streets of New York, they'll find enough people in need that they can do something great for a person in need and get some satisfaction that matters. Bringing someone else down for something as minor as this, because they identify themselves, and rightfully and proudly so, I think. Oh, and by the way, I think at the time of the stop, he was on his phone was on Bluetooth and speakerphone, and he was in a city council meeting in a remote attendance. Come on, people. As we use our energy and all that God created us to be an asset to this society, to our families, and to our fellow citizens, we need to start putting our energy towards things that make sense and put our energy towards things that will uplift us and not bring us down, that will unite us and not separate us, especially when there are things that are so frivolous and obviously things that should be thought about, digested, and put into perspective where they belong. That's my two cents. You know, I always come to you with an open and unbiased decision, or I give my personal opinion, which I hope is part of what helps us as we move forward to unite and to do better as a group together in kindness, in love, in compassion, in empathy, and as we are designed to be human beings, earning the right to occupy a space on this earth. As always, it's been my absolute pleasure to be here with you for another week of the 247 Real Talk podcast. I noticed I got a lot of new subscribers in the last week, and I want to thank you so much, those of you who shared, those of you who subscribed. I ask you to continue to do so, to spread it to your Facebook and your Instagram or wherever, so we can have a bigger conversation. Remember that if you come on my and send me an email at podcast@247realtalk.net, or any of these social media platforms, if you come in positivity, we'll have an engaging conversation. If you come with nastiness and hatred, I'm just going to block you. 247 Real Talk podcast is about uplifting, about uniting. It's not about hatred. It's about caring. It's about fighting the good fight. Do have a fantastic weekend and a fantastic week ahead and a fantastic entrance into February 2024. Until the next time, do as I always ask you to do. Please take care of yourselves and make sure that you take care of each other.